The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with John Gilroy of Lectromech, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts about some of the IT trends and challenges facing agencies and industry. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Rebecca Collin-Hirsch, Senior Vice President at Inmarsat, U.S. Government Business Unit. I got that right, Rebecca. That's a tough one for me to pronounce. We're going to talk about satellites today. We're going to talk about space and Spock and satellites and my listeners and what the heck's going on with all these satellites in the sky and Elon Musk. And we're going to talk about Jeff Bezos and all kinds of things. And you know, when I started doing my research for this satellite show, it was pretty easy. You pick up a newspaper, you see Elon Musk in the front page. You see this guy called Jeff Bezos in the front page. They're talking about satellites and rockets. And all of a sudden, kids in high school are getting interest again in learning about satellites and rocket science and landings and going to Mars and everything else. It's really incredible. What I found out, there are these new things out here called high throughput satellites, HTS. Can really, really beam stuff fast from a satellite. There are satellites that now that are small. You can put them in your hand. There are constellations of satellites out there. It's like 6 or 7 years ago, this was kind of a serious kind of intellectual topic. Now it's become a popular topic, and companies like India can send up 30, 40 satellites at a time. I mean, it's really fascinating what's going on in this whole world. So I thought we'd bring in Rebecca, and we talk about, okay, so Inmarsat, big company, been around. How can you help my listeners with your satellite technology? So that's what we're going to talk about, Rebecca. Before we begin, tell us about your background, please.
Well, thanks, John. Appreciate being here this morning. So I actually fell in love with space as a young girl. You know, laying on the back on my back in the backyard, staring
in
up
Colorado.
At stars in Colorado.
Whoa, what a place to
absolutely,
be!
Absolutely, the big sky country, and just, you know, wondering what is up there, looking at all those beautiful stars. And you know, there are different things throughout the course of my life that changed the direction. Certainly, the space shuttle and those activities when I was in college. And so, I'm an electrical engineer by training. One could argue that I'm a recovering engineer by profession. And I've been with Inmarsat now just a little over 8 years. And prior to that, I was actually in the Department of Defense, and I did a number of different things there, mostly in space, but also in experimental flight test engineering, acquisition, spectrum. So just brought a wealth of different background from the government into Inmarsat and bringing that love of space and professional experience into the company to be able to solve real challenges. And you're right that space is very exciting right now. We've always viewed it as exciting. It's just very popular at the moment for good reason. There's a lot of innovation and excitement and investment, some speculation. And then there's blue chip companies like Inmarsat that are actually covering the world with highly reliable, highly global, available satellite communication.
So you were into space before space was cool.
I'd like to think so. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's a good claim. I like that claim a whole lot. Georgetown University recently asked me to put together 7 videos on women in STEM. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying, well, looky here right in front of me. We should have Rebecca do one. I mean, this is a woman with EE background working on hard stuff. And great story to tell, wouldn't it be? It'd be fantastic.
You know, STEM can open doors for any number of different professions, whether it's something that's high technology like I'm doing today or any number of other professions. And for me, it started with a love of math. I mean, very early. I can remember my first grade teacher, Mrs. Bath. She had a snake in her classroom. That might have had something to do with it. But that love of math and science just kind of fueled a desire to do something in the high-tech industry. And there's nothing I like better now than to reach back and mentor and work with young girls in particular, but all students that are interested.
I have a friend named June Marshall. She runs a tech company over in Roslyn there. And her father has 6 patents in software, and she was coding at age 8. And she was a freshman in college. She walked into a programming class, and it was all men. They turned to her and said, "You don't fit in here, June." And she walked out. And I said, this is like having a Mozart and taking the piano from the Mozart. It's like, and that's the stories that I'm sharing in this Georgetown video series. I mean, you at least were encouraged, Rebecca. I mean, they saw this woman has got some brains. Let's encourage it. You could have been just stomped down. So you must have had some very positive youthful experiences in the classroom.
Absolutely. And wonderful mentors professionally.
Really? Right. Yes.
You know, bringing
that's the other
me
part
along
of it.
And opening opportunities and encouraging me and keeping me honest. It's always good to have that mentor that can keep it real. Yeah. And make sure that you are focused in the right area and give you some experience and some opportunities to try new things.
Yeah, that's a real good story. I think it at least will encourage some of my listeners that, well, she can do it, I can do it too. And that's the whole idea, I think, behind women in STEM. And
absolutely.
I think the brains are distributed pretty evenly in the world here, and that's good. So in Marsat, good technical background, working for some organizations, the federal government, and you switched over in Inmarsat. I mean, why did you pick them?
Well, it's a fantastic company. Inmarsat is a blue chip company in the satellite communication business. It's been in existence. It's been flying satellites for four decades now. And it actually started as an intergovernmental organization with the sole purpose to provide global maritime distress and safety services at sea. So there would be no sailor at distress anywhere on the ocean. And so that heritage of being able to provide critical communications when absolutely essential is the foundation of the company. It's our core competencies. It's the background of everything that we develop and design. And so with that backdrop, now as a publicly traded company, the U.S. government is our single largest customer. And that goes back to the days of our origin, where they were a significant partner in the intergovernmental organization. And of course, now today, continue to be an area where we focus a great deal of our investment and our innovation and problem solving.
When I get people on from HHS and healthcare folks, they talk about interoperability. Mm-hmm. That is a big, big word in the health. I mean, it's a huge word in the healthcare world. There's a huge conference, they talk about interoperability. But this is what you're talking about earlier. You're talking about intergovernmental cooperation and assistance to the seas, which is kind of a non-governmental area, kind of a neutral area. So the interoperability is really, I think, a key function to understanding what Inmarsat does.
Absolutely. And certainly in support to the military. One of the challenges for military communications is it's anytime, any place, anywhere. You never really know where the United States military will be deployed, whether it's in times of conflict or to respond to a natural disaster or some other emergent event. So satellite communications provides that critical communication anywhere they might deploy. But the military satellite communication programs have had a number of different challenges. Certainly lengthy delays. Their terminals are often lagging behind the satellite development, so some challenges. So commercial satellite communication has been a critical component to military communications for nearly a generation, and Inmarsat has been providing support in that area. In our most recent development for Global Express, we focused on ensuring that we could provide that highly mobile communication to air, sea, land, any type of voice, video, data services, but also added a component that ensured that it's highly interoperable with military satellite communications, in particular the wideband global SATCOM service. So that ensures that a user, wherever they may be, can operate on a highly reliable and trusted commercial satellite as Inmarsat Global Express, or use their own owned and operated system and traverse between the two because the systems are interoperable. We think that this provides not only significant operational flexibility, but from a security standpoint, it's highly resilient and redundant and diversity of satellites. But most importantly, it makes the mission successful to be able to have this highly capable system right alongside of and interoperable with MilSatCom.
I was at a security event yesterday and a high-level government official was up there and they're saying, you know, we kind of like commercial products because you take it out in the commercial streets and get beat up and knocked around and fail. And then when it works, then you bring it. We like that a lot. We think that's like test driving for us. And I think that's the theme I get from reading your articles and learning about your company is that, well, you know, we tried it on Mikey and it kind of works here and there. And let's now that we've proven, now we can apply it to the federal government and show you how to save money using this technology. So it's this interoperable relationship with commercial and the federal government your company has.
Exactly. I mean, we focus on affordability for our commercial customers as well as our military users and government users. And because we are such a strong commercial business, you know, we do the innovation, we manage the network, we do all of that as part of our business operations. And then the government is able to take advantage of this well-developed, sound business, sound capability at a very affordable and a scalable rate so that they can actually take advantage of SATCOM as a service, allowing us to manage the complexities of behind the glass or behind the wall network management and the different elements of development and innovation, whereas the service is provided and scaled when and where and as needed at a very affordable rate. So it's a great proposition and a good partnership with the government.
Well, we have a partnership with sponsors, and we're going to have to take a break. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Rebecca Cohen-Hirsch, Senior Vice President at Inmarsat, U.S. Government Business Unit. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Rebecca Cohen-Hirsch, Senior Vice President at Inmarsat, U.S. Government Business Unit. We're talking space, we're talking Spock, we're talking satellites, all kinds of things. Rebecca, did you know there are satellites out there that can fit in your hand?
It's extraordinary, isn't it?
I said that earlier. I'm going to say
very
that
dynamic.
All day long, I'm going to say that. I keep thinking of, like a refrigerator out there floating around, maybe like a mobile home floating around out there. But the satellite technology has changed just incredibly. And that's why we brought you in to talk about satellites and how it's changing and the whole world of satellite communication or SATCOM. So if someone is listening to this and let's say it's warm enough to walk around outside in a T-shirt or something, how can they get more information? Any articles they can read to learn about Global Express?
Just had an article published in MilSat magazine recently talking about Inmarsat's Global Express, how it adds to the resilient architecture for military applications, just trying to get the word out about how SATCOM as a service can make a significant difference to operations of government users.
And I'm pretty compulsive about SEO, so if you want to find that, it's Global Express. Two
words,
Global Express. Yeah, all kinds. SATCOM as a service, that's fascinating. We have a fellow down the hall by the name of Jason Miller, not as good looking as I am, but he still works at Federal News Radio, and he published an article this morning, and it got a lot of hits instantly, and he talks about federal reorganization. Now, there is a new sheriff in town, and he has his staff has released a 14-page memo on reorganizing the federal government, and so he's trying to view every agency as a business unit. And he wants them, apparently, I just read it an hour ago, wants them to like justify everything and reorganize their agency. And it seems to me that's going to adjust some budgets down the road. And so my question to you, Rebecca, is in the world of satellite and satellite transmissions, this is going to make the federal government customers to put some pencil to paper and relook at new things, aren't they?
That's definitely the case. And that was even announced in different fashion at the Space Symposium held last week in Colorado Springs, where there was a very significant focus on organizing the United States Air Force and its sponsorship or stewardship of space in a different fashion. So there are budgetary changes. The president has actually advocated in his recently released skinny budget to add an additional $56 billion into the Department of Defense. So that has some opportunity for change and then reorganization as to whether or not the Air Force is going to maintain its leadership as executive agency agent for space for the military, you know, what those different structures are going to look like, and importantly, how they're going to address acquisition. And that's very important for how the government users gain access to commercial SATCOM. Today, it's done pretty inefficiently, certainly not the best stewardship of taxpayer dollars, where SATCOM, commercial SATCOM, is bought ad hoc on an annual basis without great forethought.
Really?
So we're a strong advocate of more strategic planning, developing an integrated architecture, doing things more intentionally so those critical communication users can depend on Inmarsat and commercial SATCOM when and where needed and done in a more intentional fashion. So there's lots of changes that are coming down the pipeline.
Many, many changes. So NASA is going to be in the studio here in 2 weeks, and I'm thinking 2 weeks out. And Rebecca, NASA, well, wait a minute, wait, they must use satellites over. I think they. This got to be one of your customers, isn't it?
We do support NASA as we do all of the different federal government departments, and the range of applications that are flowing across are both our Global Express constellation and our legacy Heritage L-band constellation range from very, very small data rates, so kind of the Internet of Things, type applications all the way through to very high throughput airborne intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance, and everything in between. So the range of uses across satellite communication mirror very much what we do on an individual basis. You know, it used to be that we were happy with a flip phone, and now we carry an iPhone or an Android and every range of applications you can scale onto that platform, but it's the network behind it that enables it. And satellite communications is very similar.
We're going to have to drop into the weeds here. I apologize, but you threw out some terms there that some listeners may be very familiar with. Some people scratch their head. You talked about K-band and L-band. Maybe you can differentiate them, please.
Absolutely. So those are two frequency bands through which Inmarsat provides satellite communications. L-band is known for its high weather availability, for its ubiquitous coverage. It's our heritage. It's where we provide our 99.99% availability for all of our aviation and maritime safety services, as well as rich IP data services. We've added, completed in 2015 for global coverage, K-band, which is more known for higher throughput, smaller beams, to be able to allow for highly mobile operations, but with much richer data rates. You can push more data, more video across those. And the combination of the two in a hybrid architecture gives you both the high throughput as well as the high availability to be able to give you a very dynamic and flexible satellite communications architecture.
Now, flexible is the key word here. And doing some research this morning, I stumbled on a press release. There's a company that has a satellite receiver that they can put in a small bag that is like can be transferred as luggage in an airplane. They can take it off the airplane and set it up. I mean, this is pretty flexible.
Absolutely. And, you know, our terminals can be a phone, like a handheld satellite phone, all the way to a larger dish, just depending on what kind of data you're running through or what type of video throughput. And, you know, we're constantly innovating. I presented a paper last week at the Space Symposium, which I referenced in their tech track, that talks about that innovation in SATCOM. And one of the areas that I addressed was that small terminal size. So here for an airborne user, using our L-band, so our legacy capability, a terminal or an antenna about the size of a 5-pound coffee can, if you will, and pushing huge data rates of 10 megabits per second. It's exciting.
5 years ago, could you have predicted that? It's too much.
It's amazing what technology enables. And now when you look at the advent of new space and so much excitement with reusable rockets and the small sets that you were talking about and these multiple swarms of constellations that are being proposed, it's an incredibly dynamic period. And Inmarsat, although we have been in business flying satellites for four decades and a blue chip firm, we continually innovate and improve upon what we're providing and solving real operational challenges.
When I think of flexibility and scalability, mm-hmm. I bounce around this IoT and I think of the number of devices out there and billions. I think of Carl Sagan, and it's just all this information out there and bouncing through satellites. Just managing this is going to be a challenge, I think, just the big numbers involved in managing all of it. I mean, now we can have high speed, but still there's going to be so much stuff maybe high speed's not going to be enough.
Well, you need to have both. You need to have the high speed as well as the highly available, because you have a number of different environments through which you're operating. And the fantastic aspect of a global satellite communications capability is the coverage and the capacity is available when and where needed. All the time, always on. So it's on demand. It's, you know, you don't see it, but you can actually take advantage of it and know that when you have to get that communication through, whether it's in the midst of a hurricane or whether you're actually getting critical telemedicine off of an airborne platform, you can guarantee that you're going to have available quality service. And that's what satellite communication brings to you. Very different than our terrestrial communication, or even our wireless communication. It's ubiquitous for worldwide coverage.
And increasingly expected, of course.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Let's take a break and come back. I see some parallels here. Back in the late 90s, because I'm a mature, sophisticated gentleman, they would put in all kinds of these fiber cable systems all over the place, and people look at those and go, we'll never use this capacity. We'll never, ever use this way too much capacity. This is like having a warehouse that's empty for the next 30 years. All of a sudden, in the last 10 years, it's built up. And I look at high-capacity systems, I say, well, there's going to be something's going to happen in the next 5-10 years, and it's going to take advantage of all this capacity we have now with satellites. And maybe we'll talk about capacity and satellites and my listeners after this little break. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Rebecca Cowan-Hirsch, Senior Vice President at Inmarsat, U.S. Government Business Unit. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Rebecca Cowan-Hirsch, Senior Vice President at Inmarsat, U.S. Government Business Unit. Well, Rebecca, we're going to talk about Spock here. We're talking about space, you got to talk about Spock, right?
That's right.
But the Spock I want to talk about is the Joint Space Operations Center, or JSPOC. How do you pronounce it?
JSPOC.
So what the heck is JSPOC anyway?
So the Joint Space Operations Center really is responsible for tracking objects in space and making sure that...
Like UFOs? Woo!
Like space debris, like satellites, other unknown objects, and making sure that we can, as satellite operators, you can operate in a safe environment. And several years back, 2 years ago, there was an initiative started by then General Raymond, who was the director of the Joint Space Operations Center. Now General Buck is responsible for the JSPOC, where they established a commercial integration cell. And the commercial integration cell is an unprecedented effort where commercial owner operators of satellites are actually invited into the JSPOC floor to operate right alongside of government operators. This initiative is under a cooperative research and development agreement to address things like conjunction assessment. What does that mean? It's basic traffic management. What happens if you actually have an object approaching your satellite? How do you respond? How do you operate safely through this environment? Also to address challenges associated with electromagnetic interference, or EMI. But mostly it's to learn how to coordinate and cooperate between industry and government, because we are partners in the space environment. We have an obligation to have norms of behavior, to behave responsibly in space, and to be able to ensure that our satellites can operate in that environment, providing the critical communication services that we provide to all of our users around the globe.
Norms of behavior. My wife teaches in a high school. Norms of behavior. We got to bring that to the high school. I mean, it has to be learned somewhere. And I mean, if space is used by commercial vehicles and by military devices, vehicles as well, and they have a common problem. I think one common problem is this debris problem. And I think people are starting to find out now. They're seeing maps. I see graphical depictions of it. Tableau software is depicting all these things floating around. And and so if Elon Musk decides to put up another satellite, he may have to coordinate where he can get through or not, depending on the debris that's out there. And I could talk about having a bad day.
That is a bad day. A bad day in space is a bad day for all of us, because the impact of space, it affects every aspect of our lives.
Is it the final frontier?
It is not. It is the ultimate frontier. But it's not as benign as we used to think it was. You know, there are aggressors in space. There's behavior in space that, you know, we're looking at manners in which we can address this, both to operate through and to ensure that future generations can take advantage of space as an environment to offer new services. We're not too far away from what happened many, many years ago with laws of the sea. There's, you know, in the middle of the ocean, there's not necessarily an owner of the ocean, but there are norms of behavior, shipping lanes, activities, and ability to cooperate at sea. We're in that same phase in space right now, making sure that not only government and commercial, but all of the countries that operate in space do behave appropriately. In 2007, the Chinese actually demonstrated an anti-satellite technology by using directed satellite to take out one of their own satellites, and therefore demonstrating that they could destroy an object in space. Ooh. Now, in so doing, they also created 3,300 additional objects of debris that are still being tracked today and will be in perpetuity. Anyone who operates through space needs to understand where those objects are, all the other objects, so that they can launch through that and operate in that environment. It's very complex, And yet with the type of cooperation that occurs between government and industry, the aim is to actually ensure that space can be available for this generation and for future generations to provide life-changing services.
So let's say the United States Air Force has a satellite out there and a connection to a ground base, and old Elon Musk pops up a satellite, and it kind of gets in front of the line of sight. And so this is where this cooperation has to take place. I mean, there's a lot of important stuff depending on, and signals can be gotten in trouble. In fact, I was at the Satellite 2017, and there was a breakfast, and the breakfast speaker talked about interference. 150 people showed up. Just learn about interference for stuff like one satellite getting in the way of the other. And so they have to figure out ways, laws of the sea, don't they?
Absolutely. And interference, of course, is a satellite communication, the bane of our existence. You know, interference can be intentional or it can be quite unintentional. It can be someone, you know, cranking up the power on their antenna or just being in the wrong place at the wrong time. Or it could be something very intentional and adversarial in nature. So we design our systems to have the ability to operate through a noisy environment because, you know, no one wants to have a situation where your call doesn't go through. So that's very similar for any type of satellite communications. So we work to ensure that interference does not affect the ability to operate. And yet you have to make sure that you've got positive behavior, norms of behavior, and appropriate responses so that you can cease the interference if it's unintentional or respond to it if it's intended.
In the commercial world, there's a constant competition and companies going after each other and back and forth and back and forth. And many times there are overstretched budgets in the commercial world and people have to find new creative ways to handle those. And I see that happening in the federal government here with the changes in budgets coming up. And what they're going to have to be open-minded to is creative and new ways to work with maybe commercial companies who solve this problem in the commercial world and can be applied to the federal government. I just see, you know, my prediction the next 4 or 5 years, the federal government's going to be more and more opening up to solutions that they never would have dreamed of 4 or 5 years earlier. And maybe they're going to have to, you know, walk up to you at a conference and go, hey, Rebecca, can you have 5 minutes? I got this special problem and we just can't figure it out.
Well, existing space policy from the previous administration actually says commercial first. And now, of course, there's far more satellite communication capability available from the commercial sector than that which is available or owned and operated by the federal government. And, of course, the federal government satellite programs are also extremely expensive. So it's an opportunity to look at what that balance is so that they can intentionally plan and fund for commercial satellite communications as core to their architecture, their communication architecture, and then use taxpayer dollars for investment in very unique government-specific capability that for which there is no commercial business model, really applying their resources in a fashion that is for its best and highest purpose, and leveraging commercial to provide the core capability for all their critical communication.
So the National Space Policy, is this a written policy by the White House or is this by the Congress? Or what exactly is National Space Policy? Is it formal and written down? Or
there is one in existence. The last one was updated in 2010 timeframe. Of course, this administration has forecasted the intent to establish a National Space Council, which is to be led by Vice President Pence. And, of course, they have the opportunity to refresh and put their fingerprints on a new space policy. And we would fully expect that they would continue to rely intentionally on the industrial base to provide that vibrant, solid satellite communication and as well as satellite imagery and to be able to really focus on strong competition to drive costs down, but also the innovation that the industry brings to the mix. So we'll see where this goes. We're very excited about the reformulation of the National Space Council.
Tableau Software hired me to be the master of ceremonies for an event last month. There were 1,200 people in the audience. Mm-hmm. And so the slides got jammed, as always. And so the audiovisual guy, go up there and just talk for 5 minutes. So I had to stand up and so I interviewed the audience. And I said, okay, give me a show of hands. How many people want to use data visualization for finance? I saw a show of hands. How many people want to use data visualization for cybersecurity? Show of hands. How many people are going to use Tableau software for geospatial? Mm. I saw 50 people raise their hand and write in the audience there. I didn't expect that at all. I expected five. This is This is hot.
It's very hot. There were 12,000 people at the Space Symposium in Colorado Springs last week, and that's just focused on national security and civil space, so NASA and manned space. It's very exciting. It's an incredible area. There's a lot of focus in education now. The universities have areas that are focused on satellite technologies, aerospace as well. But it's very dynamic. There's a lot of exciting things in launch with the new satellites, as well as, you know, the blue chip companies like Inmarsat. We put over $500 million on an annual basis into innovating onto our network, both for security as well as new capabilities and solving new challenges. Very exciting time.
Speaking of time, we have to make some time for a break. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Rebecca Cowan-Hirsch, Senior Vice President at Inmarsat, U.S. Government Business Unit. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Rebecca Cowan-Hirsch, Senior Vice President at Inmarsat, U.S. Government Business Unit. You're a friend with Kathy Gucci by any chance? In the break, we were talking about a good friend of mine named Kathy Gucci, and instead of satellites. We're going to talk about satellites here. I was at Satellite 2017, and I saw the number of people there, a number of people from all over the world. And I keep thinking of events I go to. I was at the Salesforce conference 2 weeks ago. I'm going to go to the AWS, Amazon Web Services. And what I found out, you go to something like Amazon Web Services, and you walk in, and you learn about Redshift, and you get an idea what Redshift is all about. And then a year later, there's whole new business models that are changing. Then I have to learn about containers. And so I go to, you know, ContainerCon, and I learn about containers. And then next year, then we're talking about containers, you know, different types of analytics. And it's just, it's changing so fast. There's got to be new models in your world as well. Is that right?
That's very true. You know, satellite communication has evolved over time and is now very, very mature. And the new models coming down, really, you acquire it as a service, kind of like a cloud service, you know, very modern, innovative way to actually take advantage of the satellite communication network. And this certainly is available and an opportune chance for the government to evaluate how they're engaging with the satellite communication industry. Traditionally, the government has been leasing bandwidth. So that would be buying megahertz over a finite amount of time. Well, that would be much akin to for our cable system if we were to actually buy a portion of the fiber and expect to have the full range of services on it. What we actually advocate is not to go down that traditional leasing model, which is inherently inefficient and is not where the industry is today and is heading even more so to the future, but to buy SATCOM as a service. That way you actually can have access anytime, any place, anywhere to the amount of service that you required and put your applications on top of it. So, you know, if you were in the cable model that I just described, you could use your Netflix, you could use your Hulu, you could use your different applications. Or in a military environment, you could do advanced airborne intelligence, surveillance, reconnaissance, and really just know that the service is assured to be there. So it's reliable, you can guarantee that your mission can be accomplished, and it's accessible, scalable, flexible, and more affordable that way, rather than kind of the inefficient leasing of transponder frequencies that has been done traditionally.
I listened very carefully to that remark, and I heard the word innovative, and it dawned on me, you did have a British nanny, didn't you?
I did.
I know. I heard that word, innovative.
Yeah,
what a lucky guess.
You have to put the emphasis on the wrong syllable.
Emphasis, right. You talked about satellites, and I was listening to that British nanny in your background. It came out. It came out very subtle, though, but I don't know if people can hear that, but I sure heard it. steerable wideband capacity. What does that mean, steerable wideband? Isn't somebody with a boat or something? How can you steer wideband capacity? Is that a flexible characteristic?
It is indeed. So we have on our Global Express satellites two broad capabilities. One has basic fixed steering capacity and capability that is acquired as a service. And then on top of that, we put steerable spot beams. What does that mean? It means that we have the ability to take these spot beams, steer them anywhere within the field of view of the satellite to add additional capacity where it is required or different capability in a different location, as well as to be able to follow, as an example, an aircraft that is flying through, from point A to point B. The steerable beam can follow it and be dedicated to that particular platform. It's the ultimate in flexibility. So it adds additional capacity, capability, and operational effectiveness.
Well, I got to ask you a non-government question. Mm-hmm. So when I hop on a flight to Denver in May, I may have Wi-Fi service available. Is that another service that is this the whole idea behind flexible service distribution?
Without a question. Certainly, our commercial aviation business is our fastest growing business. And that just is indicative of the passenger, the flying passenger public is actually demanding the same access to their iPads, their computers on board an aircraft as they would in their home office. So satellite communication enables that, and that's both in the commercial environment for our own personal use when we fly as passengers. Same kind of thing in the military environment. If you have the President of the United States flying on his aircraft, you want to make sure that he has that same reliable capability anywhere he's flying, whether it's over Denver or over the Atlantic Ocean.
So where is this all heading in the next? I couldn't predict that Elon Musk and all this excitement and I have kids in their 20s. They're talking about exciting times with reusable rockets. And Dad, you understand that the big cost is with the rocket and you can reuse it. You can reduce the cost of getting this up in the air. And it's hard to predict what's going to happen. So where do you see this whole, is it going to be more of like a service-based model, or where's this satellite world going in the next 5 years?
Well, it is going more and more towards a service-oriented architecture, if you will. And certainly when you look at the exciting advances in launch, reusable rockets, what Blue Origin is doing, what SpaceX is doing, what Virgin Galactic and Stratolaunch and others are looking at in terms of the launch environment, they want to be able to offer that as a service. And to be able to provide launch as a capability, as a service. Satellite communication, the geostationary orbit is populated with satellite communication capabilities. And now there's a number of different new entrants that are talking about proliferation of smaller satellites at different orbits. So it's a little difficult to predict what's going to happen, though one can say that the investments continuing at a very high rate. Technology is advancing dramatically. The demand continues to grow at a rate where the challenge for the satellite and the space industry is to stay ahead of the demand.
So doing some research for this interview this morning, I got a little note card and started writing down these words. One word was LEO, and then MEO, and then SATCOM, and COMSATCOM. And I need a whole lot. I'm running out of ink writing down these. So LEO, MEO, COMSAT, what are the differences here?
Yeah, so we do have our own lexicon in this space business.
It's a specialized world.
No question. So GEO, which I just mentioned earlier, geostationary orbit, that is where a satellite is actually in the same location above the equatorial range at an altitude that, and the satellite stays. So if you look up into the sky and you see that satellite, it will be there perpetually. So it will follow the rotation of the Earth. LEO is low Earth orbit. So those satellites will actually create planes around the Earth. MEO is the middle orbit. Uh-huh. And so that's in between those. A good example of satellites that operate in those in those ranges today are our global positioning satellites. Those operate at MEO. So now you're beginning to see more satellites at different orbits, LEO, MEO, and GEO, to be able to provide this very integrated architecture for satellite communications, navigation, for weather capabilities. So any range of applications to include, of course, the ubiquitous communication. So it's exciting to see advantages being made and advances being made in different orbitologies, different size of satellites. And of course, the launch and access to space is a critical component of that.
So when my wife goes to Waze to see what the traffic is, that she's using LEO, MEO, the whole combination, isn't
it? The whole combination. And by the way, that is my favorite app of late, especially coming in here today, making sure that I could find these unknown roads here in Washington.
So orbitologies. Tell me about orbitology. Is this a new field of study?
Oh, not at all. Not at all. This goes all the way back to Copernicus when you actually look and see what's going on in that amazing space environment. So orbitology is just the engineer's term of the ability to determine where that satellite will operate and orbit around the Earth. And of course, orbitology as a science is being able to predict and ensure that satellites and other debris or other objects operating in space do not collide. So yeah. It's High physics, engineering at its finest.
And this interview may motivate people listening, you know, well, geez, you know, so that's how this app works. Maybe I'll take that extra math course and get a better understanding of how this all magic happens in my hand. And the motivation, maybe they can be the next Elon Musk and come up with another predictive analytic program that's going to predict the traffic for a week from now when you're driving to who knows where, to Detroit or something.
Which would be fantastic. There's, you know, the sky is the limit, or perhaps there is no limit.
There is no limit.
When it talks about space and technology.
Space, the ultimate frontier. That's what we've been talking about today. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest, Rebecca Cowan-Hirsch, Senior Vice President at Inmarsat, U.S. Government Business Unit. Thank you, Rebecca.
Thank you, John.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. If you miss any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.